Friday, August the 16th. The great air raids of yesterday and last night, only a few hours past, it is reported this morning that German bombers and fighting planes are again over southeast British coastal towns. Berlin says a renewal of the attack awaits only clearing a mist over the channel. In Rome, the Italian High Command says British planes raided North Italy again last night, but there are no details. But now the news direct, as reported by Columbia's correspondents in London and Berlin, following which there will be an analysis of the news by Lytton Wells. First, the report of Larry Lesueur from the British capital. Go ahead, London.
London. I am speaking from a crowded air raid shelter, 2 floors underground. This morning, large forces of German bombers are continuing their unprecedented attempt to bomb England. We do not know yet how many more planes the Royal Air Force have added to their record score of yesterday, when the Air Ministry announced that the RAF had destroyed 144 out of a German armada of 1,000 planes, with a loss of only 27 British fighters. During last night, the Midlands area of England was heavily bombed. One raid lasted 3 hours. Naturally, there were casualties, as yet undetermined. Two nurses were seriously hurt when a sanatorium in the Midlands was hit, but the 330 patients were taken safely to air raid shelters. Yesterday, the German Air Force launched 11 attacks along a 500-mile front. When the siren sounded in London, I watched all traffic stop for a moment. Buses unloaded their passengers at air raid shelters, but before the all-clear signal sounded, the buses were running again, and people stood in little knots on street corners, watching the skies. Like almost every large city, London's airport was erected far out in the suburbs, as a sort of afterthought. It takes a taxi about 20 minutes to get to Croydon from the center of London. Unlike airports in America, Croydon Field is a great expanse of lush green grass. It has no asphalt runway. I made the familiar trip to Croydon this morning, where in peacetime, big transport planes skimmed off the gently rolling church to Paris, about an hour away. But this morning, the grass in Croydon was colored a dirty greenish-white, dust thrown up by German bombs dumped there last evening. A number of the buildings that surround the vast field were in ruins. An army of tin-helmeted air raid wardens were digging and searching. They had been working all night by the light of flares. Probably the first lights that have appeared at night in London since last September 1st. The number of air raid wardens was matched only by the number of little boys who had made the long trip out to the bombed airport on their bicycles. Like small boys the world over, these little English fellows were busy picking up bits of rubble as souvenirs. I was astonished by the number of people who walked around wearing a neat white bandage on their heads, like a skull cap. The reason was apparent. Croydon Airfield is surrounded by small, neat, suburban houses. The ones nearest the field had their shingled roofs hit by falling bricks. I learned that most of these injuries were slight, but they served to give London's air raid ambulance girls the opportunity to use some of the skill they had acquired in 11 months of assiduous practice. Most of this morning's onlookers were in almost holiday mood, eager and curious. But the persons who lived in the little houses near the bombed field were obviously shaken by their experience. They were just recovering from that stunned expression you can see on the faces of people who have been in an auto crash. The results of the German raid were obviously not important so far as military objectives are concerned. It was more the nature of a spectacular feat, probably intended to demonstrate that the air defenses of London can be penetrated at will. If this were the German object, they obviously succeeded. But if they figured to break the morale of the London populace, they have just as obviously failed. For even those people wearing the skull caps, the white bandages, managed to grin very often. Yesterday, they were obscure suburbans. Today, they are heroes in the eyes of their neighbors. This is Larry Lesueur returning you to CBS in New York.
That was Larry Lesueur reporting from London. And here are some late dispatches we have just received. Rome. The government denied today that the unidentified submarine which torpedoed the Greek mine layer Hela yesterday afternoon was Italian. Another dispatch from Rome. British planes, for the second time this week, early today, roared over northern Italy, and the general headquarters communique admitted that 2 persons were killed and 5 wounded in raids on Matite and Ogliatta in the northern rural section of Italy. The communique, which said the British planes had crossed Switzerland en route to their Italian objectives, claimed that Italian anti-aircraft guns in the Turin area had shot down 1 British plane near Cresola d'Alba. The crew was said to have consisted of 5 men, some of whom were killed while the remainder were captured. And now for news of the German capital and the report of Edwin Hartwich, we take you to Berlin.
This is Berlin. The official German news agency reports that the weather conditions along the English Channel are bad this morning. So operations of the German Air Force today may be reduced in consequence. Last night, we are told, the bombing raids of the Germans continued. This time, the objectives were the industrial centers in the Midlands and northeastern England. But at this moment, we have no further details. The roundup of yesterday's daylight operations has been given out by the German High Command. In the large-scale fighting, virtually over all of England, the Germans claim they shot down 98 British planes and destroyed 8 others on the ground. At the same time, the Germans say they lost only 29 planes. Also, the Germans say that 5 more balloons were knocked down in their attacks on the barrage at Dover yesterday. They are also presented with a summary for the last week, up to 8 p.m. last night. In that period, the German High Command states that 505 British planes were destroyed, while 129 German planes are considered lost. That is the accounting from the Berlin side of the fight. No doubt Mr. Merrill has something to tell you about the British accounts for the same period. However, as regards the reports, the Focusher Beobachter sums up the official feelings here in its front page headline today as follows. So they lie, so they will continue to lie. The German press and the High Command have given no indication that the air attacks on Britain and the results are not going according to schedule. For instance, the paper Mittag writes this morning, quote, our planes have conquered the superiority of the air over England. The British postal fortifications have been crushed within a few days, end of quote. Then the paper accuses Winston Churchill of having multiplied the German losses by 40. And then, by adding up resulting British figures, the German plane losses amount to 11,000 planes, this paper claims. Well, that's a little problem to cry out in the adding machine these days, while waiting for more concrete news. This morning, the Berlin papers do not report that German planes bombed Croydon Airport outside of London. They report that London had its 5th air raid alarm since the start of the war, when German planes passed overhead, but no bombs were dropped. Although the London anti-aircraft batteries went into action, we read. But the Berlin radio picks up and broadcasts an Associated Press story about the attack on Croydon, and that large columns of smoke were seen over the London airport. Incidentally, the official news agency this morning denies the English reports that the Germans used over 1,000 planes in the attacks on Britain yesterday. The Deutsches Nachrichten Bureau writes this morning, that only 200 bombers and about 320 Messerschmitt fighter planes took part in the day-long air battle over Great Britain. Well, that is all we have to report on air activity this morning. The Deutsche Zeitung, the German paper for occupied Holland, reports that Joseph Simon, who is a German civil administrator for the tiny duchy of Luxembourg, has declared that there is to be no longer, quote, a grand duchy of Luxembourg, unquote. The Constitution of Luxembourg is no longer valid, he states in his decree, because the government has fled. The oath of public officials to the former government is cancelled out, and they have to pledge their loyalty to the new German administration. Britain is watching with interest the Finnish crisis, which has developed with the resignation of Mr. Tanner, the foreign affairs minister, William Strassi said this morning. However, Germany has taken no action, nor any official attitude, in the Finnish affair, the foreign office spokesman added. There was a story of a propaganda company reporter in one paper this morning that 6 unidentified Americans were picked up by a German naval vessel when a 9,700-ton Dutch ship was captured in the Atlantic Ocean while en route from Panama to England. The 6 Americans, including a missionary and his wife, were unloaded in France and taken to the French-Spanish border where they were turned over to American transport officials, we are told. This is Edwin Hartwich,
attorney at Columbia, New York. That was Edwin Hartwich speaking to you from Berlin. Here in New York, Clinton Wells is standing by with more news and his analysis of the news. Mr. Wells.
From the looks of things, the British have demonstrated that not only can they take it on the chin, they can also dish it out. Although Edwin Hartridge said from Berlin that most German planes were grounded by mist today, our correspondent Larry Lasseur told us from a British air raid shelter this morning that the Nazi Air Force is continuing yesterday's 16-hour attacks, while Britain remains undisturbed over the fact. More than 1,000 German warbirds strafed England, Scotland, and Wales for 60 continuous hours yesterday and at it again now, according to Mr. Lasseur. While English fighter planes and anti-aircraft were and are taking their toll of Nazi war machines, the RAF was doing some blitzkrieging on its own account against German and Italian bases, showing that two can play the same game. Most experts are still of the opinion that a fortnight's continuance of Nazi air operations will prove, one way or another, if Hitler's forces are capable of bringing Britain to her knees. As British planes reportedly continue their night raids on northern Italy, Rome grows more incensed at Switzerland. Although the Swiss are lodging a vigorous protest with Whitehall against RAF planes flying over the Alps on their way to Italy, the fascists are threatening drastic action against Switzerland on the grounds that the Swiss are in reality cooperating with the British. Coming on the heels of the Italian press campaign charging Switzerland with insulting Italy and Germany and urging Italian residents of Switzerland to defend themselves, it is not beyond the bounds of probability that the fascists are preparing for some sort of punitive action against Helvetia, as they are apparently against Greece. There has been no explanation so far of yesterday's mysterious submarining of a Greek mine layer off the island of Tinos and the subsequent torpedoing of a quay with considerable loss of life. But there are reports from Athens that Italian planes have attacked the Greek steamer Frinton off the island of Crete. Rome professes ignorance about these attacks, but the Italian press continues to charge that Greece is a tool of Great Britain in a plot to upset the peace of southeastern Europe and is promising a strong Italian answer. This would seem to be leading up to an Italian demand for Greek territory, which will probably be granted, thus complicating Britain's position in the eastern Mediterranean. Yesterday, you will recall, the United States Marines managed to obtain control of the most important sector of the former British section of Shanghai, an area which includes the downtown business, banking, and hotel district, and the Huangpu River waterfront. This left the United States the sole Occidental nation in a position to uphold the rights of the open-door policy in China. The Japanese made no effort to conceal their disgruntlement over the failure of their efforts to gain complete control of Shanghai's international settlement, and it was prophesied freely that Tokyo would reject the plan. This morning, it is reported from Shanghai that an official Japanese spokesman has made a summary demand upon American officials to turn over the newly allotted British sector to the Nipponese. To submit to these demands would be tantamount to complete surrender of all American and all Occidental rights in China, while Secretary of State Hull has said on more than one occasion must be restricted and maintained. So the probability is that the Nipponese demands will be summarily rejected by Washington. But the Japanese are not people who understand the meaning of the word no. So the probability is that the American Marines in Shanghai are in for a warm time of it during the weeks to come. How far the Japanese militarists will go remains to be seen. But heretofore, they have shown little respect for any foreign power's rights except those of the United States to a mild degree. Now that they are in a position for a real showdown with America, it is too much to expect that caution will characterize their dealing with the situation. If simple pricking and vocal protests were likely to be the extent of Japanese pressure, there would be no cause for concern. But the Nipponese are extremists in all things, and apparently they have gone too far to back down. So it would be wise to keep one vigil eye on Shanghai and the other on Washington and Tokyo. And in Siam, judging by reports from Tokyo, the Japanese are fostering a Siamese move to obtain restoration of territory from French Indochina. Five Siamese divisions were said to be concentrating along the French Indochina border and threatening invasion.
With this report and analysis of the news by Linton Wells, CBS correspondents in London, Berlin, and New York have brought you the latest reports on the current European situation. Tony Marvin speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.